The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. If you still think it's Monday, man, you've got a pretty nasty post-Christmas hangover. Work on that. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, should we be cranking up Glenn Frey singing The Heat Is On? Or did that opening win on Sunday only give us a few nuggets of information to work with? Why, when one coach says, burn, baby, burn, it's anything but a disco inferno. And forget about old rock and roll and disco for a moment. Tonight, we're going to play a little jazz.
So, Mr. Malinsky, here we are. It's a Tuesday. It's post-Christmas. We've had 3 days off of the show. It's the longest break we've had since we started. How are you feeling today? What's your first take for a Tuesday?
Well, since we've got nothing but money time all week long this week, because we've had so many games to go over, we're going to do a post-mortem right off the very bat. Talk about Russell Westbrook, the point guard for Oklahoma City. One of the things we saw at the end of last year, when they failed in the playoffs, was Westbrook not being the ideal point guard at crunch time, not distributing, taking too much on his shoulders, making bad decisions in the fourth quarter. So they had an offseason to review, to tweak things up. And what have we seen in the two opening games, which you might not have noticed, because Oklahoma City is 2-0, makes bad decisions, forced a lot of plays in the fourth quarter, and last night just had an awful, awful struggle down the stretch. Through the first two games, he's already taken 38 shots. That's not what they're going to win with. And how about back-to-back games of 7 turnovers, consecutive games of more turnovers than assists? That rarely, rarely ever happens with NBA point guards. We saw the same Russell Westbrooks to open the season that we saw to close last year, which tells us a team favored by many to win the West may not be there quite yet. All right, Teddy, through the first holiday cycle as a father, with so much going on around the clock, Tuesday morning now, what did you bring through the door?
Well, we got to talk about Monday Night Football. And I really want to talk here about the unwritten rules of sports, because we have some in every sport. In baseball, you're not allowed to bunt to break up a no-hitter, unwritten rule. In basketball, when you're leading at the end of a ball game, you're supposed to dribble out the shot clock in the last 24 seconds in college, or 24 in the NBA, or 35 in college, these unwritten rules. And in football, the unwritten rule is, well, you're not supposed to run up the score. You're not supposed to throw the ball in the fourth quarter with a big lead. And that's exactly what the Saints did last night. In an effort to get Drew Brees to break Dan Marino's all-time passing yards in a single season, fourth quarter, Saints up comfortably, Drew Brees on the field throwing the football. Why'd they do it? Hey, you have a national TV audience. You have a primetime game. You have an opportunity to give your quarterback, who's had a truly special season, that record in front of that audience. I got no complaints for what the Saints did last night. Anyone that's bitching and moaning and whining about these unwritten rules in sports, frankly, if you don't like the way a team is playing against you, if you don't want the Saints to throw the ball in the fourth quarter up 4 touchdowns, stop them. Pick off the pass. Get a stop. Force some incompletes. The Falcons couldn't do that. Today, Mike Smith and the rest of Atlanta whining in the newspapers. And frankly, if you wanted to do something, do it on the field. Don't do it in the press. Of course, we could easily see a rematch between these two teams in New Orleans just 2 weeks from now, depending on how things shake out in that NFL wild card picture and in the playoff race. And Dave, we're going to talk about that playoff race on tomorrow's show, break down every game or every team and what they have to play for. But today, on Market Watch, we got to set up what we're doing for bowl season. Let's see. All bowls through Thursday, we're going to go today. All Friday games are going to go on Wednesday. All Saturday games are going to go on Thursday, and the New Year's Day games go Friday. We have four jam-packed shows this week. Going to go through every single bowl game, as well as break down the NBA, break down college football, college basketball, I should say, and of course, NFL Week 17. So lots and lots of money time for those of you money time fans out there.
Yeah, really, this is one of the best weeks of the year if you're going to be here in Las Vegas. Every day when we leave the show, we're going straight home to watch a bowl game. We'll actually even have some bowl games while we're on the air. Know what the schedule really means, though. Those New Year's, we say the New Year's Day games, actually the Monday games on the second, we're going to do on Friday, largely because most of those games will have kicked off before we were going to be on the air. So we will not be on the air on Monday, knowing that you'll be watching those games instead of us. We know how you are. So we'll get all that done for you. So we will cover every bowl game. We'll cover the NFL throughout the week, some great NBA opportunities. And you know what's also great about this cycle, the way the calendar lays out? Look at how many big-time college basketball games in the days ahead. The Big East and the Big Ten opening tonight. The Pac-12 opening this week. The Missouri Valley, another good conference, opening this week. So we've got an awful lot to do. The rest of today's show, tonight's baskets, we've got bowls to do. Tomorrow, though, as Teddy said, we will lay out team by team what the playoff implications are for this Sunday. We were going to do it today, but a lot of games still haven't hit the board yet. So we're going to wait till tomorrow morning. By then, we expect to see just about everything on the board. But for today, we got a whole lot of money time coming up.
And a whole lot of ground to cover. So let's get to it and talk about how you can become a part of the show. It's real easy. We're looking for your emails. We're looking for your contact. sportsday@covers.com. We will do an extended mailbag next week. Not going to do it this week. It was a little bit too much to cover, but an extended mailbag. Heck, we might do a whole show of all the emails that we're getting. Again, send them in to sportsday@covers.com. Follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And of course, get involved in the community. What are you waiting for? Lots of active threads and discussions going right now. covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, we're going to follow the bouncing ball and head to the Tuesday night hardwoods. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. And let's start with a big game on the college hardwoods for tonight as Big East play begins. TV matchup tonight. We'll go to South Bend, Indiana, as Notre Dame and Pittsburgh square off in the first game of the Big East season. And a big injury question mark for tonight in this ballgame. The Pitt point guard, Travion Woodall. He's missed the last six games with a groin injury. He's considered to be a game-time decision for the Panthers. And boy, this guy is most assuredly an impact player. How about this? 14.1 points per game, sure. That's nice. 8.3 assists per game, that's huge. And when you look at how this Notre Dame offense, or how the Pitt offense, I should say, has functioned with and without him on the court, you're going to see some dramatic disparities in their offensive flow when they have their point guard healthy. Right now, very much a question mark for this evening.
The difficulty Pittsburgh's going to have is if Woodall plays tonight, they're going to have a tough time getting into an offensive flow. We haven't seen Mike Bray, the Notre Dame coach, go to his burn offense much this season. We expect to see it tonight. Now, if you follow the team the last couple of years, the burn is his way of competing against teams that have a little more physical talent, who like to get up and down the court a little bit, where they will simply hold the ball until the final 10 seconds of the shot clock and then go into a play. Bray will do it tonight, not only because it makes sense against Pittsburgh. And look at what he's in the last three games in this season. They beat Pittsburgh 56-51 at Pitt last year when Pitt was ranked number two in the country. The previous year, 68-53 in South Bend. And then again, 59-54 in Madison Square Garden in the Big East tournament, all with the burn. There's an added reason this year. Not only does it slow Pitt down, the problem Mike Bray has is the team just can't score anyway. Look at their step-ups in non-conference play. 58 points against Missouri, 57 against Georgia, 53 against Gonzaga, 58 against Indiana. And that wasn't Bray using the burn to slow those games down. That's the fact that he's got a young team that is having a difficult time assimilating. They've got 8 wins this year. They've got 8 different starting lineups. That's been that difficult, putting the pieces together. They were relying on Tim Abramidis. He's already gone for the year. Not one single Notre Dame player has started all 13 games. So one of the things we expect to see tonight is, from the Notre Dame standpoint, look for the burn to be in play for the first time. Might not necessarily help us with who's going to win the game. Again, we're not going to know about Woodall. He's going to be a game-time decision. He did make the trip. But possibly in terms of this total, those last three meetings, they played 78 points below the projections. Might that door be open tonight?
Well, Woodall makes a huge difference when it comes to the total as well. And when we talk about Pitt's offensive flow, with Woodall on the floor, Ashton Gibbs, I mean, he's played the point with Woodall out. And playing the point, Gibbs is shooting 29% from three-point range. When he was playing his more natural two spot, guess what? That goes up to 42% from three-point range. So when you talk about an offensive flow for Pitt, it's going to make a big difference if this young man able to suit up tonight after missing, again, those last six games with the groin injury. Miami. Let's go to Miami, Dave. Right now, the Miami Heat minus 10.5 against the Boston Celtics. And it's a bit of a head-scratch of a point spread, but maybe it's not. When we consider Boston, big dog. They were dogs at New York the other day. Got the cover, didn't get the win. Now, with the step up in class, we're seeing the market really not afford Boston any respect at all.
Miami looked dynamite on Sunday. They beat the Lakers a lot worse than that final score if you were having a Christmas party and you didn't watch the game. Dallas outscored them 29-8 in the fourth quarter when Miami didn't have any of the starters on the court. And there's a litany of things that were terrific here because they're calling the offense pace and space. They want to play a lot more wide open. They don't want to attack the basket. Fabulous stuff here. 31 fast break points. They averaged 14.2 last year. 71 of 78 shots from two-point range. Not many triples. LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, didn't attempt a three-pointer that entire game. LeBron, 17 transition points. Last year, his average was 6.1. We could go on and on and on about this. How about at least 30 points in each of the first three quarters? Absolutely brilliant stuff. As Miami finally turned the corner for real, did we see something truly special? And then we wake up tomorrow or the next day and we scratch our heads a little bit. And why is that, Teddy?
Well, it's real simple, because Denver just went into Dallas and did the exact same thing last night. Complete annihilation over the same math. So Miami looked really, really good beating Dallas. And then Denver looked just as good, maybe even better. That game was, 69-42 by halftime, was complete garbage time by midway through the third quarter. And when we look at what the Heat were able to do and say, yeah, we were impressed, maybe a lot of teams are going to do that against Dallas this year. You're certainly not getting any bargain price with Miami in this point spread range. Then again, we start looking at the Boston side of the equation. And here's a Celtics team that may not have Paul Pierce again tonight. He's going to be another one of these game-time decisions. And without Pierce on the floor in the fourth quarter against the Knicks, we saw Carmelo Anthony get open look after an open look. Celtics couldn't get stops. They were outscored 27-17, blowing that lead late against New York on Sunday. And that's a big concern because, I mean, Boston shot better than 51% from the floor in that ballgame. They won the Battle of the Boards by 10 over the Knicks, and they still lost the game. So how good are the Celtics really right now? That's a major question mark and a major concern for Boston as they travel to face the defending Eastern Conference champs.
Let's go to the Staples Center in Los Angeles, where the Lakers, right now 4.5 over the Jazz. We have the first of many 3-3s coming up this NBA season. So a chance to test how the markets are going to react to it. And this one is especially unique. Lakers playing 3 games in 3 days, coming off of a road game in Sacramento last night. Utah completely fresh. In fact, the Utah players are already in Los Angeles watching the Lakers on TV while the Lakers were up in Sacramento. Early line was sitting around 5. Some people yesterday bought it all the way down to 4, but now the morning markets take it back to 4.5. So at least there is someone out there willing to bet on a team playing their 3rd and 3 against a fresh opponent. But are they necessarily making the right move?
Well, not in my mind. I don't think they are, Dave. But we like two-sided action. If everyone had the same opinion, frankly, none of us would have good bets. So it's good to see two-way action. It's good to see people with differing opinions than ours. And certainly the Lakers in terms of must win. I mean, they're 0-2 now. They found a way to lose an opener against Chicago in which the Bulls didn't play very well. And a loss that looks even worse now. We saw what Chicago did in Golden State last night where they were pretty much complete no-shows. And then L.A. went to Sacramento. They were run out of the gym in that ballgame. The final score, competitive. L.A. still in it in the fourth quarter. But if you watch the game, you know the feel. Pretty much from the second quarter on, it felt like Sacramento was going to win that game, cover that number, and they did. And now, again, we're seeing the Lakers not just, you know, in a point spread range, they only have to win. They get a win by margin against Utah tonight. In college football, we talk a lot about, not a lot, but we talk certainly somewhat about teams that get that week one bye and then have to face an opponent who has already played the first week in week number two. And generally, those teams that didn't play facing an opponent that did play are at a significant disadvantage because teams grow significantly from game one to game two. That's not the case in the NBA. These teams have all played preseason games together. And at this stage, I think fresh legs trump game experience. And Utah certainly has fresh legs for this matchup.
So let's look at some of the other factors that are involved here. One is preparation. Utah can put a specific game plan together for the Lakers. The Lakers can't. Utah hasn't announced a starting lineup yet. We only know two things for sure. Al Jefferson will play center. Devin Harris will play point guard. We don't know who's going to start a power forward. Two good options there, Paul Millsap, Derek Favors. You've got a bunch of guys on the wings who could all start. Miles, Hayward, Bell. Possibly Bell at the two guard tonight just to defend Kobe a little bit in the early stages. But the Lakers can't really prepare for the Jazz, even if they choose to. We don't know if the Lakers will have a shoot-around today. Having to play a 3-3, they may not have one. So Utah's going to be the better prepared team, the fresher team, the deeper team. And here's where the Lakers are interesting to us. First two games, a bench that may not be all that special has outscored the opposition by 23 points. If you're the Lakers and your bench wins those games by 23, and yet you lose both of them, you do a minus 11 when Kobe's been on the court, you do have some real issues. So let's play Utah here. Let's go game of the day or play of the daytime. The Utah Jazz plus 4.5 against the Lakers tonight. Look for the fresher legs of Utah and the deep rotation they have to force tempo, out-hustle the Lakers on the boards, and don't be surprised in the fourth quarter if the Jazz are able to win this game outright.
When we come back, we're going to get deep into the Bulls. We're going to start tonight in Charlotte. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, it's money time too, and we're going to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, where NC State tonight, -1.5, total 44.5. against Charlie Strong and the Louisville Cardinals. This Louisville team was very good to my pockets this year. I'm not convinced this is the right matchup for them, especially when we consider Tom O'Brien's tremendous long-term track record, both late in the season and here in bowl games. Just a quick look at the hard numbers. Late season, how about this? 48-22 ATS. That's the last five games of the regular season plus bowls. We look at 20-7 here at NC State in that role. And after losing his first career bowl game, Tom O'Brien now 5-1 straight up, 7-0 against the spread in bowl contests. He certainly has a track record of keeping his team prepared.
And Louisville's an interesting team for us to work with. One is they're very young. There's going to be 8 freshmen starting tonight. Even the upperclassmen only have 1 bowl game under their belts. That was just the Beef O'Brady Bowl last year. But boy, was this an ordinary Louisville team. You look at their non-conference record, they only go 2-3, losing to mediocre bowl teams like Florida International and Marshall. Very unimposing. Even in Big East play, they go 5-2, but they were minus 28 in first downs in those 7 games. What did Louisville do right? We're not sure. They may have just had the ball bounce right for them at a lot of times. So let's look at some of these bottom line numbers after they played through a pretty weak schedule. Number 100 in the nation in scoring. Number 104 in total offense, number 111 in sacks allowed. We bring that up, particularly that last number, because Teddy Bridgewater, still a freshman at quarterback, going up against an NC State team that will blitz a lot. NC State was number 11 in the nation in getting sacks this year. So Louisville was opportunistic. They managed to get a lot of fortuitous things to happen. But is it possible that losing to Florida International and Marshall and then going 5-2 in Big East play might be telling us something about the Big East?
Yeah, and the one thing that NC State brings to the table that Louisville's going to have problems with, they can rush the passer. Number 11 in the nation in sacks. And, you know, Louisville's offense wasn't good. They were 100th in scoring. They were 104th in total offense. They were number 111 in sacks allowed. Some of that has to do with the Frosh QB, Teddy Bridgewater, who went through his fair share of growing pains when he was installed in that role early on. But yeah, Bridgewater still got a little bit better, but the Louisville offensive line, not necessarily a unit of strength for the Cardinal this year. And we look at NC State, their biggest problem, they didn't play well away from home. You look at the 44-14 national TV loss to Cincinnati, a loss that still resonates in the mind of the betting marketplace. You look at their two late season losses at Florida State, at Boston College, games where they were outscored by a combined margin of 48-10. When NC State went south, it was because the offense didn't get the job done, not because the defense wasn't playing at a high level. But this game being played in Charlotte, no, it's not their home field. But you know what? It's going to feel a lot more like a home game for North Carolina than it will for Louisville.
Let's go to Wednesday afternoon, RFK Stadium in Washington. We've got Toledo minus 3.5 and 70 over Air Force. Another one of these classic conundrum games, and we talked about this the first day on the air after the bowl pairings were announced, how unfortunately there were too many draws where we had play-on teams versus play-on teams. Here's a good example. We like both of these teams. We like their chemistries. We like what they're going to bring to a bowl game. We wish they were both playing someone else. If there is somewhere to start, though, right from the very beginning, the Toledo focus. At first, we thought there was going to be a real problem because not only did they lose Tim Beckman to Illinois, but 2 assistants, Mike Ward and Alex Galesh, have also already left. So we thought, okay, this is going to be awkward. We were going up against a very complicated Air Force package on both sides of the ball. Air Force plays a lot of tricky schemes. Could this Toledo team be a little bit disillusioned or a little disorganized under an interim coach? Well, it's not interim coach anymore. Mike Campbell, the offensive coordinator, only 32 years old, he was promoted. He is the full-time head coach now. That was a good move by Toledo. He's a good fit for the program. Probably the best way to keep the team organized and focused so that they know they're playing for the same coach. They got to come back to spring practice within a couple of months. That keeps your discipline there. But still some difficult times for Toledo to match up against this Air Force spread offense. Tim Jefferson leading him to the 4th bowl in as many years, the first Air Force quarterback to have ever done that.
Yeah, and the quotes from Toledo are telling us a very clear story about their potential struggles against the Air Force triple option. Here's one from senior quarterback Desmond Merrow. Quote, studying for this is harder than studying for finals. May speak volumes about what the finals week is like at a university like Toledo, but the bottom line is that this is a difficult matchup for a Toledo defense that, they weren't very good this year. Certainly not in their step-up games. We saw Toledo's offense go like gangbusters. They almost beat Ohio State in Columbus at the Horseshoe. We saw them, you know, their only loss. They're 7-1 straight up their last 8 games. The only loss during that span came in a game where the offense scored 63 points against Northern Illinois. Of course, the defense gave up 66, but there are some issues for Air Force and their ability to contain this offense, most notably speed in the secondary. Eric Page for Toledo. He's going to play on Sundays, and he's the type of guy likely to give Air Force some trouble. When we talk about Air Force's record, and Air Force, again, a 7-5 team this year, not one of their better teams. And you look at the seven wins for the Falcons. What do we got? We got Colorado State. They stunk. UNLV. Whew. It smells bad. Just even saying the name doesn't sound good. We're talking about UNLV football. Army, they weren't any good. New Mexico, maybe the worst team in all of Division I football. Navy, their worst team in years. They weren't a bowl squad this year. Oh, Navy took them to OT, by the way. And then Tennessee State and South Dakota, two FCS squads. So Air Force didn't beat anybody all year, not one good team. When they stepped up in class against bowl teams, 0-5, straight up. They were favored in three of those ballgames. The only one they covered was a double-digit loss to Boise State.
So can we trust Air Force as an underdog here? No, they're just not quite good enough. They'll move the ball well against Toledo. They'll play smart. They'll play disciplined. Maybe if the game gets to four tomorrow, a tiny little bit for your pocket. But our big concern is Air Force getting their defense off the field. Toledo, just too much speed, too many playmakers. Certainly not going to lay points here. With that Toledo team, it's lost their prime defensive coaches. They may have a real difficult time getting stops, but there's just not enough coming from the Air Force defense to take those points.
Let's go to Wednesday night in San Diego. Right now, Texas minus 3-48 against the Cal Bears. And Cal was a very difficult team for me this year, Dave. I thought the Bears were going to be good right from the get-go. They cost my pocket. Then I thought they were bad. Bet against them, they cost my pocket. Couldn't get the rhythm down with Cal all year long. They ended up being a pretty good team. Zach Maynard, he's not going to play on Sundays, but his receivers will. If you have a chance, you look at Keenan Allen, Maynard's half-brother, and Marvin Jones, two guys that definitely, I'm not going to say DeSean Jackson, but Cal receivers have done all right at the NFL level, and these guys both, I think, have futures playing on Sundays. But the rest of the Bears, there's a lot of hodgepodge here. They had a lot of good games and a lot of bad games. And when you have a team like this, Dave, where you just can't get the feel right, what do you do when it comes to bowl time?
We focus on the other side. And of course, we also break down the way that we saw Cal this year, too, is Maynard was a game manager. Does have some playmakers at running back and wide receiver, but just a game manager. So against defenses that bring speed, that could cover those receivers, that could take away that running game, when it came down to Maynard having to carry a load, there were some real clunkers out there. Look at the Southern Cal game. Look at the Oregon game. Real clunkers against defenses with speed. Which brings us to Texas. Yeah, when we get to Alabama and LSU later, we'll say not only the two best teams in the country, but the two best defenses. You know the number three defense might have been Texas. Now, we'll chart the numbers this way. When you look at their total numbers, it's number 15 in total defense. That's pretty good. Number 11 against the run. That's pretty good. Number 13 in pass efficiency. That's pretty good. How do we get them all the way to number three? Look at the schedule of offenses that they faced. This is how the teams ranked in total offense this year. Baylor, number two. Oklahoma State, number three. Oklahoma, number four. Texas A&M, number seven. Missouri, number 12. Texas Tech, number 13. That's half of that Texas schedule going up against teams that were in the top 13 in the nation in total offense. So when you look at these overall Texas defensive numbers, boy, they did some terrific, terrific work against real top-flight competition. That means this could be exactly the type of team that could give Zach Maynard some trouble.
Yeah, but can the Texas quarterbacks be trusted? You know, you look at Case McCoy, the sophomore, the freshman, David Ash. Neither one of them was able to grasp a hold of the full-time quarterback job right through the end of the season. The two guys were switching in and out of the lineup. And the reason that was the case, well, they weren't that good. I mean, they played like young quarterbacks between them. 12 interceptions versus only 10 touchdowns for the entirety of the season. And the Cal defense played fairly well down the stretch. Didn't necessarily step up in class well, but they did play better than they did over the first half of the season. So Holiday Bowl, as soon as you see Holiday Bowl, their thought process has to be, dog and over. That's been a money-winning strategy for years. You've done at worst splitting with that combination. I'm not so sure that's the case in 2011, because these offenses, a little bit behind the D's.
When we come back, Money Time is going to shift to the Thursday Bowls. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Thursday evening in Orlando. Florida State -3, total 46.5 against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And this may be a very different Florida State team right now than the one we saw to close out the regular season. Look at these quotes from Florida State. And again, this is a team that went through major injuries, particularly on the offensive side of the football, all season long. Jimbo Fisher, quote, "I've never been through injuries like these, like we've been through this year. It was just one of those years, but in the end, it gave a lot of young guys time to develop and play." The biggest key for Florida State, finally, some healthy receivers. More from Fisher, quote, "It's the first time we've had all the receivers in practice where you can just trust the timing and trust the rhythm and let the ball go."
Let's go one step further. How about Kenny Shaw, one of those wide receivers? Because he might be saying the single most important subplot of the entire game here, maybe from a total standpoint. This is the receiving core we expected coming out of camp, and we expected to dominate. Even with the guys going down, we still picked up the slack. And here's the good part. But as you see now, we're going to try and throw some shots. That's someone referring to what they're doing in practice each day. So there's a little bit of looseness going on with Florida State. And we like that. We like the talent. We like it when they play a little more aggressive. But here's the problem. There are going to be some times in this game on Thursday where there are eight true freshmen playing at the same time on offense. So yeah, they can be loose. They can be aggressive. Do they have the experience yet? It's the flip side of this equation, though, well, where it might be the most intriguing. Notre Dame with that little bit of an unsettled quarterback situation. Look at how good the Florida State defense was this year, even though the offense wasn't always supporting them that well. Number 4 in scoring, number 6 in total defense, number 2 in rush defense, number 9 in sacks, number 5 in tackles for loss. Very dynamic numbers. And if there's going to be a subtle key in this game beyond that defense, if it's a battle of field position. And when the total's in the mid-40s, the odds makers are trying to say defense and field position are factors here. How about the best matchup all season in terms of turning the field? Florida State, number 1 in the country in net punting. Notre Dame, 120th, dead last in punt returns. Could be for as much as Florida State says, we want to play more open, we want to be more aggressive. No, if we can knock off 45 yards a net punt against a team that doesn't return well, we can turn the field over. It's a little bit of a conundrum. They want to be more aggressive, but will it really play out that way?
And Notre Dame has consistently been a money loser for their supporters over the course of the last decade plus. You can go back to the Tyrone Willingham era. Throughout the Charlie Weiss era, Notre Dame lost money on a consistent basis for their supporters. And the current era really hasn't been that much different. Notre Dame, money losers again this year. And you run into this when it comes to recruiting rankings as well. A lot of times when a player is being recruited by the Fighting Irish, all of a sudden the ranking goes up. And at the end of signing season, you see that Notre Dame's, oh boy, they signed all these top-notch recruits. And yet at the end of the year, here they are, 8-4, 7-5, a mediocre ball club. How does that happen? It's almost a self-perpetuating system. Because the guy gets recruited by Notre Dame, he's considered to be better than he actually is. Because Notre Dame has this storied program and all of this, they're projected to be better than they actually are. Fighting Irish, again, if you back them all year long, you didn't make any money, you lost money. That's been the case for at least the last half decade. It's been a while since Notre Dame had a winning point spread season.
Let's go to Thursday night, the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, and maybe the most fun game to watch of all this year. Right now, Baylor, 9.5, total 79 against Washington. That total tells you a little bit about what we could be looking forward to. And again, it's 48 hours away till kickoff, a little over 50. That 79 could be 80, could be 81. These teams can get up and down the field a little bit. Now, we told you a couple of weeks ago how happy we were about that whole justice element of college football. Robert Griffin won the Heisman Trophy. Made us feel a lot better about where things are. But while Robert Griffin is awfully good, and the market's a 9.5, is the rest of Baylor deserving of this role?
Well, let's take a look at some hard numbers from that Baylor defense. And just a moment ago, Dave, you did a fantastic job breaking down the Texas defensive numbers against the quality of opposition that they faced. And no question, Baylor faced some quality offenses, lots of good ones, in the Big 12 this season. But at the end of the year, you look at these numbers and you say, this team's laying 9.5. Look, number 114 in total defense, number 109 in scoring defense, number 102 in rushing defense, number 95 in pass efficiency defense, number 84 in sacks created, number 92 in tackles for loss, number 114 in net punting. That's not a pretty group of defensive stats. And when you look at the Washington side of the equation, Dave, we're talking about a team that is loaded with playmakers, aren't they?
Yeah, when you see those Baylor defensive stats, it's even more to tell you about how good Robert Griffin really was this year. Washington's got playmakers. Keith Price is healthy at quarterback, wasn't always the case in the second half of the year. Over 67% completions, 29 touchdown passes, but 8.1 yards per pass attempt. They get the ball down the field because they got a lot of guys down the field who can catch it and make plays. Let's go down the list. Jermaine Kearse, 42 catches, 6 touchdown passes, 11.9 per reception. Devin Aguilar, 36 catches, 4 for touchdowns, 14.5 per. Austin Seferin-Jenkins, 36 catches, 6 touchdowns, 13.3 per catch. Kaysen Williams, 33 catches, 6 touchdowns, 12.4 per catch. James Johnson, 26 catches, 3 touchdowns, 12.7. Look at how many guys on this team are averaging better than 12 yards per reception. Why are they so successful? Because if the safeties have to creep up or have to lay back, there's Christian Polk running between the tackles, a guy who will be drafted by the NFL. So here's a quarterback who's got an NFL arm. Here's a running back who'll be drafted. Here's a bunch of receivers who have NFL possibilities going against a bad defense. If we can take 9.5 and maybe 10, one of the things we told you last week is if you like an underdog in these games, wait. You're going to find some real good numbers because there's going to be forced action on these standalones. 9.5 is enough. You might even find a 10. And if you can find that, Teddy, what do you do with it?
I think you make it play of the day material. Again, this is a Baylor team. Their combined bowl experience was when they got drubbed by Illinois. Pretty mediocre Illinois team last year. 38-14, manhandled the line of scrimmage. Not going to say the same thing happens here, but I do not see Baylor winning this game by margin. We're going to take the Washington Huskies plus 9.5. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. You got two of them, and guess what? The first one, just looking here at my live odds screen, you can find 5 with the Lakers right now. The market has moved on that ballgame. Not on this one. Plus 9.5 for the Huskies, but 2 play of the days on a Tuesday in December. We're going to do it again tomorrow because that's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For the professor, Dave Malinsky, I'm Ted Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you in 23 hours.